Hello, and welcome to a podcast of the Global Alliance for Behavioral Health and Social Justice. My name is Jill McLay, and I'm the policy liaison for the Alliance. Today, I have with me Sarah Buckingham, who is a PhD candidate at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, in the Clinical Community Psychology Program. Sarah is with us today to talk about acculturation, a very timely topic given what we are hearing in the news on immigration and on refugees and asylum seekers. And so first, Sarah, I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about what acculturation is and why we should care about acculturation.
Sure. So acculturation has been around in the scientific literature for quite some time. And some people who are listening to the podcast might have heard the word assimilation, and that's the way that we used to think about acculturation back in the 1950s and 60s, where we assumed that when people would immigrate to a new country or new culture, that they would slowly renounce their previous cultural values and practices and customs and take on all of the customs and practices and values of their new communities. And so even our school systems were set up to promote this assimilation and becoming fully in a society and sort of letting go of everything you had before. And acculturation was a response to that in the 1980s, where we started to say that you can take on new aspects of a new culture without losing aspects of your old culture. And so John Barry's work is really the seminal work in the field that comes out of the 1980s, and these are bidimensional models of acculturation, which say that you can take on aspects of your new community while also holding on to aspects of your old culture. And depending on how you combine those, you have different ways of acculturating or different acculturation styles. So someone who is quote unquote bicultural is someone who identifies strongly with the new community or new culture that they're living in, while also holding on to their previous cultural values and practices. Someone who's assimilated follows that old model of taking on the new practices of their new community and letting go of all of their previous practices. And someone who's marginalized is someone who doesn't sort of fit into either cultures, while someone who's separated is someone who holds on to all of those old cultural practices and values and doesn't take on any new values of their new community. And it's an important field of study because there's been a lot of psychological literature that has connected different ways of wellness and being healthy psychologically to different ways of acculturating. So people who are bicultural generally have the best mental health outcomes, whereas people who are marginalized and don't feel like they fit into either culture generally have the poorest outcomes. There's also lots of implications for how people are interacting with their societies. People who do take on new aspects of their new communities generally have less conflict with other members of that community. But there's also a lot of wonderful things about being separated and not blending in. There's a lot of protective factors that come there. So it's a complex field.
Yes, it sounds like it. So now you got interested in this topic because... Mm-hmm.
So acculturation isn't just limited to the immigration literature, and I, as someone who has lived in lots of different places, have also gone through the acculturation process in my own daily life, but most of my work is with Latino immigrants in various parts of the United States. And one of the things that I noticed as I was progressing through my professional career and eventually went to graduate school was the different ways in which communities are really shaping the acculturation process. So in psychology, we look at acculturation at a very individual level typically, and we assume that people take on customs and values because those are things that they want to take on. And yet we know, and those of you that are clinicians or students or in your own personal life, you often know that you do practices or you engage in customs that are not necessarily the customs that you prefer. And so I became really interested in newer models of acculturation that look at this difference between ideal acculturation, or the ways in which we want to change and maintain our cultures, and real acculturation, which are the ways in which we're actually enacting culture, and then how communities play a role in that process and can facilitate ideal acculturation or keep people from acculturating in the ways that they want.
And so recently, mm-hmm. you completed an extensive 4-state mixed methods yes. study that involved working with a variety of, or immigrants from a variety of statuses. So mm-hmm. you were, I think it was about a third of the folks that you talked to were unauthorized, yes. or did not have any kind of official status. Mm-hmm. About a third had some kind of permanent resident or citizenship status. And then mm-hmm. you had about a third that had some type of authorization, a green yeah. card or something, to be in the United States. And they were all from Latin America. Mm-hmm. So what did you learn from this study?
So this was a multi-state study because we were looking at how receiving communities, or those are communities that are accepting new members or have new immigrants moving into them, are impacting the acculturation process. So about a third were unauthorized, about a third had some sort of temporary or permanent status, and then a third had attained that U.S. citizenship. And so we found that generally the Latino immigrants who participated in our project across these different states, which were in very different areas of the United States, so the Mid-Atlantic region and the Southwestern region, generally folks were desiring to change and maintain their cultures pretty similarly across the sites, but they were not always able to actually enact the cultural practices and customs that they wanted to, depending on the areas in which they were living. We also found that individuals were acculturating differently according to different life domains. So generally people were wanting to maintain more of their customs related to their family functioning and their deep values and belief systems and religion, whereas they were much more likely to desire cultural changes that related to more public spaces, so things like work practices and political and governmental systems and the social welfare system. Folks were much more interested in making changes in those domains than they were in those central private domains. And what we found is that these communities were really shaping the ways in which individuals were acculturating. So people who were living in places that had more restrictive immigration policies generally had more challenges actually being able to maintain and change their cultures in desired ways. Oftentimes folks felt forced into making cultural changes to blend into their communities when those communities had more restrictive policies. Whereas folks who were living in places or in smaller sub-communities where they felt welcomed and felt like they were able to develop a sense of community with their new communities, were able to make more of those cultural changes that they desired to make.
Right, and it's sure we all are aware that having an unsuccessful acculturation mm-hmm. process, or having difficulties with maintaining those ties that give you a sense of self and help you to maintain your identity, can have significant psychological impacts, both on the individual and on the community at large. So can you talk to us a little bit about what some of the implications are of your research?
Definitely. So the other piece of this research was looking at when real acculturation, or the ways in which people are actually enacting their cultures, when that diverged from the ways in which they ultimately wanted to enact their cultures, they had poorer well-being. So the more that people were actually able to acculturate in the ways in which they desired and not feel forced into making changes or forced into maintaining practices, the better they talked about their multidimensional well-being. And that was both psychological well-being and as well as economic well-being and social well-being and all these different components of well-being. And it was partially explained by the amount of acculturative stress that they were feeling related to the Latino immigrant community as well as the U.S.-born receiving community. And so we as clinicians in particular can think about how do we help our clients to be able to enact their cultures in the ways in which they desire at that at that, in those therapeutic relationships, that's a beautiful thing to help your clients move forward in enacting cultures in desired ways. But then also at the larger community level, what are the resources we're putting in place to help our newest community members be able to navigate their new societies, to be able to get into the job and employment practices that they want to be able to that they want to enroll in, as well as being able to maintain those pieces of their families and family functioning that oftentimes different laws or policies within communities can really stifle. And so thinking about acculturation more as an individual choice, but impacted by these larger communities, what are ways that we can enter into these communities and shape the process to help people achieve what they want?
This is really important research that we're talking about here today, especially given the shape that our policy environment is in right now at the local level, the state level, and the federal level. So in a minute or less, Sarah, we'd like to hear about what you're planning to do next with this research.
Yeah. So this research, we're hoping to spread to other communities. So the communities that we've done this project in, we're in the Baltimore, Maryland area, the Richmond, Virginia area, the Phoenix, Arizona area, and the Albuquerque, New Mexico area. And so we have those four states that we've been developing partnerships in and looking at how these acculturation processes are playing out. And we hope to continue this process in different areas of the United States that have different histories of immigration, different ways of receiving communities impacting the acculturation process. Ultimately, my goal is to help communities to be able to foster an openness and acceptance to help support their newest community members in being able to change and maintain their cultures in the ways in which they desire. And we see a lot of great examples of that in across a lot of these the sites that we've been in where our newer Latino immigrant community members were really feeling welcomed and feeling able to achieve culture in the ways that they wanted to. And yet we also have a lot of examples of areas for change and ways in which we can help to perhaps decrease some prejudice and discrimination and make our laws more supportive of our newest community members so that folks are able to integrate in. Because we know that when individuals within communities are well, communities as a whole are more well. And so by impacting our Latino immigrant community members, we're actually also bolstering the U.S.-born community members and other community members to make more well communities.
And Sarah, one last question. Yeah. For folks that are interested in learning more about acculturation, maybe specifically for the Latino community, do you have any recommendations of where they might be able to learn more?
Yeah. So folks are definitely welcome to get in contact with me. And I'm sure you can probably put up my email or contact information on the site.
Yes.
And then I would also recommend folks look into a lot of their local Latino immigrant or other immigrant organizations that are in communities. Oftentimes there are a lot of really wonderful supports that are already built into communities that if folks want to get some more hands-on experience and know what's happening in their communities, those are the great people to go to. And then I'd recommend folks check out things like the Global Alliance as well as the Society for Community Research and Action, which have been moving in this area and working more on acculturation. How do we support acculturation processes?
And Sarah, we thank you for being with us today. Again, I was talking with Sarah Buckingham, a PhD candidate from the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, and we hope you will join us again for the podcast of the Global Alliance.